Chapter 18. A bird's eye glimpse of Mistox's dwelling place. Also of the state of Mistox's affections. Mistox inhabited a dark little house that had been squeezed, at some remote period of English history, into a fashionable neighborhood at the west end of the town, where it stood in the shade like a poor relation of the great street round the corner, coldly looked down upon by mighty mansions. It was not exactly in a court, and it was not exactly in a yard, but it was in the dullest of no thoroughfares, rendered anxious and haggard by distant double knocks. The name of this retirement, where grass grew between the chinks in the stone pavement, was Princess's Place, and in Princess's Place was Princess's Chapel, with a tinkling bell, where sometimes as many as 25 people attended service on a Sunday. The Princess's Arms was also there, and much resorted to by splendid footmen. A sedan chair was kept inside the railing before the Princess's Arms, but it had never come out within the memory of man, and on fine mornings, the top of every rail there were 8 and 40, as Mistox had often counted, was decorated with a pewter pot. There was another private house besides Mistox's in Princess's Place. Not to mention an immense pair of gates, with an immense pair of lion-headed knockers on them, which were never opened by any chance, and were supposed to constitute a disused entrance to somebody's stables. Indeed, there was a smack of stabling in the air of Princess's Place, and Miss Tox's bedroom, which was at the back, commanded a vista of mews, where hostlers, at whatever sort of work engaged, were continually accompanying themselves with effervescent noises, and where the most domestic and confidential garments of coachmen and their wives and families usually hung, like Macbeth's banners, on the outward walls. Apostrophe at this other private house in Princess's Place, tenanted by a retired butler who had married a housekeeper, apartments were let furnished to a single gentleman. To wit, a wooden-featured, blue-faced major, with his eyes starting out of his head, in whom Miss Tox recognized, as she herself expressed it, something so truly military, apostrophe and between whom and herself, an occasional interchange of newspapers and pamphlets, and such platonic dalliance, was effected through the medium of a dark servant of the major's who Miss Tox was quite content to classify as a native, apostrophe without connecting him with any geographical idea whatever. Perhaps there never was a smaller entry and staircase than the entry and staircase of Miss Tox's house. Perhaps, taken altogether, from top to bottom, it was the most inconvenient little house in England, and the crookedest. But then, Miss Tox said, what a situation. There was very little daylight to be got there in the winter. No sun at the best of times. Air was out of the question, and traffic was walled out. Still Miss Tox said, think of the situation. So said the blue-faced major, whose eyes were starting out of his head, who gloried in Princess's Place, and who delighted to turn the conversation at his club, whenever he could, to something connected with some of the great people in the great street round the corner, that he might have the satisfaction of saying they were his neighbors. In short, with Miss Tox and the blue-faced major, it was enough for Princess's Place, as with a very small fragment of society, it is enough for many a little hanger-on of another sort to be well connected, and to have genteel blood in its veins. It might be poor, mean, shabby, stupid, dull. No matter. The great street round the corner trailed off into Princess's Place, and that which of High Holborn would have become a chivalric word, spoken of Princess's Place became flat blasphemy. The dingy tenement inhabited by Miss Tox was her own, having been devised and bequeathed to her by the deceased owner of the fishy eye in the locket, of whom a miniature portrait, with a powdered head and a pigtail, balanced the kettle holder on opposite sides of the parlor fireplace. The greater part of the furniture was of the powdered head and pigtail period, comprising a plate warmer, always languishing and sprawling its four attenuated bow legs in somebody's way, and an obsolete harpsichord, illuminated round the maker's name with a painted garland of sweet peas. In any part of the house, visitors were usually cognizant of a prevailing mustiness, and in warm weather Miss Tox had been seen apparently writing in sundry chinks and crevices of the wainscot with the wrong end of a pen dipped in spirits of turpentine. Although Major Backstock had arrived at what is called in polite literature the grand meridian of life, and was proceeding on his journey downhill with hardly any throat, and a very rigid pair of jawbones, and long flapped elephantine ears, and his eyes and complexion in the state of artificial excitement already mentioned, he was mightily proud of awakening an interest in Miss Tox, and tickled his vanity with the fiction that she was a splendid woman who had her eye on him. This he had several times hinted at the club. In connection with little jocularities, of which old Joe Backstock, old Joey Backstock, old Jay Backstock, old Josh Backstock, or so forth, was the perpetual theme. It being, as it were, the major's stronghold and dungeon keep of light humor, to be on the most familiar terms with his own name. Joey B. Sir, the major would say, with a flourish of his walking stick, is worth a dozen of you. If you had a few more of the Backstock breed among you, sir, you'd be none the worse for it. Old Joe, sir, needn't look far for a while even now, if he was on the lookout. But he's hard-hearted, sir, is Joe. He's tough, sir, tough, and devilish sly. Apostrophe, apostrophe. After such a declaration, wheezing sounds would be heard, and the major's blue would deepen into purple, while his eyes strained and started convulsively. Notwithstanding his very liberal laudation of himself, however, the major was selfish. It may be doubted whether there ever was a more entirely selfish person at heart, or at stomach, is perhaps a better expression, seeing that he was more decidedly endowed with that latter organ than with the former. He had no idea of being overlooked or slighted by anybody. Least of all, had he the remotest comprehension of being overlooked and slighted by Miss Tox. And yet, Miss Tox, as it appeared, forgot him, gradually forgot him. She began to forget him soon after her discovery of the Tootle family. She continued to forget him up to the time of the christening. She went on forgetting him with compound interest after that. Something or somebody had superseded him as a source of interest. Good morning, ma'am, apostrophe said the major, meeting Miss Tox in Princess's Place, some weeks after the changes chronicled in the last Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.